Hey, History of Persia fans. Before Persia, another civilization controlled the Middle East. The very first civilization, the inventors of writing itself. From the clay tablets of ancient Mesopotamia come the oldest stories. The history and myth of the first Mesopotamians is the subject of the Oldest Stories podcast online at oldeststories.net. If you like ancient history, come check out the Oldest Stories after you listen to this episode.
The history of Persia is intertwined with conquest. It began with conquest when Cyrus, king of a small city called Anshan, set out to build the greatest empire the world had ever seen. In a series of stunning campaigns, he achieved just that, becoming one of the greatest conquerors in history and basically started Persian history. After all, you don't get the title the Great for nothing. But he wouldn't be the last great Persian conqueror. Other Persian rulers like Darius the Great, Mithridates I, and Ardashir I would go on to become great conquerors on their own, establishing their own great empires and legacies. If you want to hear their story, and the stories of other great conquerors, many of whom are far less famous despite their great achievements, join me, Ramzi Shalah, on my podcast, The Conquerors Podcast, available on all platforms you listen through.
Gamarjoba, and welcome to the History of Saakatvilo, Georgia. I'm your host, Roberto, and this is episode 39, The Siege of Nokalakevi. In this episode, we will take a look at the different cities in the Lazika region, Persian commander Mir Mirdawi's interactions with them, and his siege of Nokalakevi. Before we begin, I want to thank my Patreon members who have been amazing as always with their continued support. This show couldn't run without you. Thanks to Audrey Neeson, Andrew Schneider, Mitchell Dutt, Eric Nicholson from Ranking 76, Gerald Eliasser, Hallie Kuntz from Quest Friends, Quinn Campagna from Noblesse Oblige, Mandy Robertson, our amazing artist, and David Montgomery from The Siecle. You are all amazing, and I value each and every one of you. Now, let's get into today's episode. Shifting northward from Petra, we come to a fortification that the Romans call Archaeopolis, that we know as Nokalakevi in modern-day Georgia, and was founded as Sikegolgi many episodes ago during the reign of King Parnavas I. Procopius even names this as the first and greatest city in all of Lazika, but we will call it Nokalakevi today. With the destruction of Petra Justiniana in 551 at the hands of Commander Bessas and his Roman forces, the Persian commander Mir Mirdawi abandoned his march towards the destroyed fortress. He knew that the Lazi had no other fortress beyond the Phasis River now that Petra was gone, and he capitalized on some relative safety in the region to capture some of the Iberian mountain passes into Lazika and forded the Phasis River. This path led Mir Mirdawi directly to Nokalakevi. We will take a look at Mir Mirdawi's several stops from Iberia into Lazika as he made his way up to Nokalakevi. But let's take a look at his forces. Mir Mirdawi's forces were made up of mostly cavalry, along with 8 elephants, which, similar to Lord of the Rings, he could use as a shooting base for his archers. It was honestly a marvel that Mir Mirdawi could even bring his cavalry force into the Iberia-Lazika region. All the difficult passes, ravines, and forests would be difficult for a normal person traveling on their own, let alone a military force bringing all their gear behind their back. Trust me, I have taken a train through this region to go to Kutaisi, which is also in this episode, And those trains have to go up and around mountains, so I can't even imagine a whole cavalry. However, as I'm saying this, I do remember that the Persians made various roads during previous forays into Lazica just to make transportation easier for this exact reason. However, Mirdoway didn't come alone with his Persian troops. He had a large force of Hunnic troops from the Saberoe tribe, numbering around 12,000 men in total. However, these allies of his were a huge concern to him. He didn't know if the Saberoe would listen to him when they were all together, or worse yet, betray them and begin working for the Romans at the last minute. So, he devised a plan. He'd only bring a total of 4,000 warriors at one time with him, while the rest were paid with money and sent back home. And yes, I do know the Saberoe worked with the Romans in the previous episodes. However, think of them as more of a mercenary force instead of just an actual ally. The Romans had a similar number of total men as the Huns did, but that was altogether in a separate region and not under one full banner. 3,000 of these men were under the control of Odonakos and Babas in Nokolakevi, with the remainder camped on the other side of the Phasis River under the command of Venilos and Uligag. This was due to a plan that the four commanders made that if the Persians moved to attack Nokolakevi at any point, they could move out to reinforce and attack in full force. So that way, attack the city, the remaining 9,000 men would come in and attack the Persians from the rear. Varazes, the Persarmenian, also joined these men, and he brought a total of 800 Zanoi auxiliaries under his command. Now, what had Bessas been doing in the meantime? Riding his high of capturing and destroying Persia, his will faltered to continue fighting. He was an old man, of course, and at this point, after all, he decided to withdraw to the Pontians and Armenians and decide that bookkeeping would be his best work now. Well, Procopius took this and was highly offended, and he vilified Bessas and says that this policy of Bessas wrecked the causes of the Romans, saying, quote,
"For if, immediately after that victory that I have described and his capture of Petra, he had gone to the borders of Lazica in Iberia and barricaded the passes there, it seems to me that a Persian army would never again have entered Lazica, but in fact this general, by lazily overlooking this task, all but surrendered Lazica to the enemy with his own hand, disregarding the possibility of imperial anger. For the Emperor Justinian was accustomed to mostly condone the misdeeds of his commanders, and consequently they generally behaved criminally in private life and toward the Republic." Procopius, The Wars of Justinian, Book 8, Chapter 13, Lines 12 through 4.
Thank you, Michael, from Quest for Power, for reading. However, other things were happening with the Lazi forces on the Iberian frontier. There are two areas that we mentioned previously, Skanda and Saropanis. These forts, like most forts in the area, were hard to get to because they're on the top of a mountain and had the unfortunate detriment of being unable to grow its own food, leading it to rely on people constantly resupplying the fortress, which honestly isn't a great place if you expect to be sieged from time to time for long periods of time. Skanda and Saropanis were originally garrisoned by the Lazi. However, once the Lazi War started, Justinian ordered the Lazi to leave this fortress, and there he placed his own Roman troops. These Romans were not used to such supply issues in a place they were expected to remain in for quite a while, and they abandoned the fortress, mostly because they were down to just eating millet. The Lazi troops were fine with eating millet, which is a cereal type of grain, but the Romans were not. They preferred their grain, and a bit of a tangent because I like those. Too much millet can cause thyroid issues, which explains some issues that Herodotus mentions in our early episodes. Also, another reason to abandon the fortress is that the Lazi stopped being consistent in making supply deliveries to the fort. It's almost like kicking them out had the opposite effect of what you could want in defending the land, Justinian. Well, the Lazi razed these fortresses to the ground after the first treaty signed in the war, but the Persians rebuilt Skanda, and Mirdoway led the army to that fortress. After departing from Skanda, Mirdoway moved towards Rhodopolis, or modern-day Varzihe, both meaning City of the Rose. Varzihe was easily accessible from Skanda and open to an attack. Well, the Lazi, fearing that the Persians would capture it and use it to further entrench their forces in Lazica, would burn it to the ground. Mirdoway saw this as an absolute win and moved towards Nokolakevi. They did his job for him. They didn't have to defend something, and he could keep his forces. He also learned that there was a force of 9,000 Roman troops camped along the Phasis River that we mentioned earlier. Also, to him, it made way more sense to take out the larger force and then besiege Nukalakevi, since he did not want to be attacked in the rear by the Roman troops. Next up, he does go to Nukalakevi, and this quote is just amazing. It's way too good. Quote,
"He, Mirmiroe, went close by the fortifications of Nukalakevi and gave a mocking salute to the Romans there, and with something of a swagger said that he would be right back. For, said he wished to greet the other Romans first, who were encamped by the Phasis River. The Romans, by way of answer, told him to go wherever he wished, but they declared that if he came upon the Romans there, he would never return to them." Procopius, The Wars of Justinian, Book 8, Chapter 13, Lines 25 to 27.
Thank you, Umberto, from So You Think You Can Rule Persia, for reading. However, despite their grandstanding, the Romans were obviously shaken. They had seen the size of Mirmiroe's forces, and knew that there were not enough men to withstand the Persians. So, they got onto their boats, stacked it to the brim with supplies, and tossed what they couldn't carry overboard so Mirmiroe couldn't use his supplies. When the Persian commander arrived at the camp, it was completely abandoned, and he was filled with anger and resentment. He wanted to fight the Romans and defeat them decisively. He ordered the camp burned and turned back to lead his army against Nukalakevi.
Hello and bonjour. My name is Josh Zucker, and I want to take you on a journey through some of the most exciting events of the late Middle Ages. Valois Burgundy was one of the medieval world's greatest what-ifs. Its dukes inherited, conquered, and politicked their way into forging a state between the German Empire and the Kingdom of France that rivaled them both. From the Hundred Years' War to the Holy Roman Empire, from urban workers to Joan of Arc, and from gallant knights to gunpowder weapons, the Grand Dukes of the West had a part to play in almost all of Western Europe's biggest developments in the 14th and 15th centuries. If you want to learn more about the glamorous rise and dramatic fall of the Dukes of Burgundy, please join me for Grand Dukes of the West, A History of Valois Burgundy.
Hello everybody, this is Trevor Cully, host of the History of Persia podcast. From about 550 to 330 BC, most of the Middle East was ruled by the Achaemenid Persians. The Achaemenids pioneered the concept of a truly multinational empire, which incorporated people from as far away as India and Greece for over 200 years. The story of Persia discusses the fall of ancient civilizations, the origins of endurance racing, 300 Spartans, the March of the 10,000, and at least one evil priest who replaced and impersonated the king. All before falling with the dramatic close at Alexander the Great's conquests. If that story, and the story of the cultures that surround it, sound interesting to you, check out The History of Persia at historyofpersiapodcast.com, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
As Mirmiroe arrived once more at Nukalakevi, he could see the grand Lazai city in front of him. He sent scouts ahead to ensure that he knew the layout of what he was working with. Procopius describes Nukalakevi thus.
The city of Nukalakevi is situated on an extremely rugged hill, and a river flows by it, coming down from the mountains that are above the city. It has two gates, one of which is below, opening on the base of the hill, and this one is not accessible except insofar as the ascent to it from the plain is not smooth, but the upper gate leads out to the steep slope and is extremely difficult to approach, for the ground before this gate is covered with brush that extends to an indefinite distance. As the inhabitants of the city can get no other water, those who built it constructed two walls that extend from the city all the way down to the river, to make it possible for them to draw water from it in safety. Procopius, The Wars of Justinian, Book 8, Chapter 14, Lines 1 through 3.
Thanks to Aurora from Sword, Sorcery, and Socialism. Mirmiroe was eager to assault the walls of Nokolakevi almost immediately. He had his full force behind him, morale high after his victory over the Romans. He commanded his Sabiroe troops to build rams to break down the gates, much in the same style as the Roman Sabiroe allies had done to siege Petra. He had learned of the method and wanting something similar to use against the Romans. Mirmiroe then ordered the Delami, a tribal group in the middle of Persia, to harass the Romans along the steep parts of Nokolakevi. Mirmiroe chose this tribal group due to their experience in fighting against the sheer slopes, while the rest of his forces focused on the lower gates, with rams and elephants. The Persian forces shot rapidly at the walls, filling the air with their arrows, and the Romans nearly abandoned the parapet they were on. The Delami, from their front, hurled the javelins at the Romans and actually did more harm than the arrows. The Roman situation had gone from bad to worse, and they were taking serious damage. Odonakos and Babas, the Roman garrison commanders, ordered a few soldiers to remain where they were, defending the wall from the Persians at the parapet, and spoke to the remainder of the troops, saying, "Fellow soldiers, you see the danger we are in, and the necessity gripping us. We must not yield in the least to these evils, for one thing only can save those who have come to despair of salvation, namely not to cling to safety, or a fondness for life tends in most cases to be followed by destruction. You must consider this fact also in our present difficulty, that by simply defending against the enemy from this parapet, your safety will by no means be guaranteed, even though we carry forward the struggle with the greatest zeal. For a battle waged between armies standing apart gives no one opportunity to show himself a brave man, but the issue is generally determined by chance. But if the conflict becomes a hand-to-hand struggle, enthusiasm will, in most cases, prevail, and victory will side with valor. Apart from this, even if they succeed in battle, men fighting from the wall reap no great benefit from this success because, while they have for the moment repulsed the enemy, the danger will peak again on the next day, but if they fail even by a little, they are naturally destroyed along with their defenses. Yet, if they conquer their opponents in hand-to-hand combat, they will thereafter have their safety assured. With these thoughts in mind, let us now advance against the enemy with all zeal, calling on help from above to our aid and with our hope raised high by the desperate situation that has now fallen to us. For God always saves those men who find no hope of safety in themselves." Procopius, The Wars of Justinian, Book 8, Chapter 14, Lines 14 through 21. However, while this was occurring, one of the Lazi nobles of Nokolakevi had negotiated with Mirmiroe to enter his service in exchange for the Lazi nobles setting fire to the warehouses and granaries of the city. Mirmiroe's grand idea was that if the Romans saw a fire spreading through their provisions, they would turn around and attempt to put it out almost immediately, thus letting his Persian troops scale the walls unimpeded. Another reason for this is that if the siege were prolonged, it would end quickly due to a lack of grain supplies, and he'd be able to capture the city quickly. So the Lazi noble went forth and set the buildings aflame. Odonakos and Babas were concerned about the situation and left behind a few more men to deal with the fire, but concentrated on the defense of the city. With that, Odonakos and Babas opened the gates to the city and let loose the Roman dogs of war. The Romans crashed down against the Persians unexpectedly and slew many due to Persian unpreparedness. Mirmiroe had not expected them to attack, and the troops carrying the rams were unarmed and unarmored and were cut down immediately. Then, an elephant horn trumpeted and rumbling reverberated through the earth. The Romans had wounded one of the Persian elephants and began to break the ranks of friend and foe alike, even throwing the archers on its back to the ground. The auxiliaries retreated from the battle, but the Roman troops stood their ground and managed to repel the elephant back. How did they do this? Well, they dangled a pig from the wall, and a pig's squeal irritated the elephant so much that it retreated. The retreating elephant caused great confusion, leading them to become panic-stricken, and they chaotically retreated. The Delami, who were fighting along the walls, also retreated, and Romans began to rout their enemy. 4,000 of the auxiliary troops died during the rout, and 4 Persian standards were captured and sent to Justinian. Mirmiroe withdrew his whole army to Kutaisi, since they still controlled most of Lazica. Kutaisi, according to Procopius, is known for its wine and all the good things made there. Mirmiroe wanted to rebuild Kutaisi, but he had no equipment on hand with him, and with winter fast approaching, he replaced the broken down sections of the walls with wood. Close by, The Lazi controlled a fortress called Uthimerios and were reinforced by a small number of Roman troops. However, with Myrmidois' position in Kutaisi, he could easily control their supply lines and prevented Uthimerios from getting any additional provisions. Thus was the situation of Lazica. To connect with us, feel free to find us on social media under @history_Georgia or on Facebook at The History of Sacramento, Georgia. Our intro music is Bindis Peria Sopeli by Zidashe. They'll be touring the U.S. in September 2024, so keep a lookout for them. To help this podcast continue, please feel free to subscribe to our Patreon or donate via Ko-fi or PayPal. The links are in the episode description. If you would prefer donating something a bit more tangible, we also have an Amazon wishlist for you to peruse. Now, the best way to help us is via review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcast host, as it goes a long way of getting the word out about the show and helping us reach new people to learn about Georgia. Madlaba, the Nakmambis, and thank you for listening to The History of Sacramento, Georgia. See you next time.
Hey, History of Persia fans. Before Persia, another civilization controlled the Middle East, the very first civilization, the inventors of writing itself. From the clay tablets of ancient Mesopotamia come the oldest stories. The history and myth of the first Mesopotamians is the subject of the Oldest Stories podcast online at oldeststories.net. If you like ancient history, come check out the Oldest Stories after you listen to this episode.
The history of Persia is intertwined with conquest. It began with conquest when Cyrus, king of a small city called Anshan, set out to build the greatest empire the world had ever seen. In a series of stunning campaigns, he achieved just that, becoming one of the greatest conquerors in history, and basically started Persian history. After all, you don't get the title the Great for nothing. But he wouldn't be the last great Persian conqueror. Other Persian rulers like Darius the Great, Mithridates I, and Ardashir I would go on to become great conquerors on their own, establishing their own great empires and legacies. If you want to hear their story, and the stories of other great conquerors, many of whom are far less famous despite their great achievements, join me, Ramzi Shalah, on my podcast, The Conquerors Podcast, available on all platforms you listen through.